This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Range Podcast. I'm Ricky Brule, and with me is Jake Hollywood Iverson. Join us at the Archery Range, where we'll tell stories from the hunt, discuss technical bow shooting tactics and gear, and pick the brains of some of the most successful people to ever shoot a bow. Whether you're about to shoot that X for the win or send an arrow at a trophy buck, this podcast is for you. Range Podcast is brought to you by Vapor Trail Archery, makers of the best bowstrings money can buy, originators of limb-driven arrow rest technology, and innovators of stokerized stabilizer systems.
Welcome to the Range, everybody. I'm your host, Ricky Brule, and I'm here with my amazing co-host, Mr. Jake Hollywood Iverson. How you doing, bud?
Exhausted.
I bet.
That should be a new part of the podcast, actually. Every time I just come up with a new word, like just one word. That's it. No describing anything.
Exhausted. Exhausted. We're just going to leave it at that. Nothing else. Has nothing to do with 80 hours a week.
At
getting
least.
Getting the pro shop going.
Yeah.
You know, continuing operations as need be.
Yeah. I'm realizing I forgot to put my Vapor Trail shirt on, so I'm sorry.
I don't have one on either. But
it's going good.
Good. Yeah. Good. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So today we're going to talk a little bit about turkeys. We're getting into that season, so we're gonna dive right in. But before we do that, welcome to the Range, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. You can watch this episode on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. Please head on over there, give us a like, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. And of course, if you're listening, give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do. So today we've got a very special guest. He has been on the podcast once before, and we're super excited to have him here. He's been a critical part of assisting us in getting the pro shop going. We have a ton of his mounts on display in our pro shop. So head on over if you want to take a look at the wonderful world of his natural history museum, is what I like to call it. And he's also a very, very good turkey hunter. I would say a majority of the methods that I use when I turkey hunt, a lot of that is a soup of you know, techniques and tactics that Frank has shared with me. Well, there you go. I just announced it. Mr. Frank Welsh, welcome. Hey,
well, hello. And that's, well, it's very kind words, very kind words. I'm just lucky to get out in the woods and enjoy it as much as I can. So, and happy to pass on any information that I can. So where would you like to go with tips and whatnots?
I have a first interjection. He helped us greatly, immensely on the pro shop. Literally yesterday was running the pro shop alone for about an hour.
Oh, wow.
So thank you.
Thanks, Frank. I asked remotely if you could assist. I didn't realize I was going to turn into you running the show.
Yeah. No, that was just happy to help. Oh, there's a gentleman that's came in and assisted him with a little peep rotation thing that he had. So I got that squared away. Happy to help out.
Just know that if you're ever in here, you're going to get roped into helping every time. You know that, right?
And that's totally fine. That's totally fine. Always happy to help. Always.
That's great.
That's why we love you, brother. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners a little bit. Just tell them a little bit about your hunting experience and kind of where you've been.
Yeah. Frank Welsh, of course. And then I started hunting when I was like six. And my dad was an avid houndsman. So, you know, that's chasing raccoons and bobcat and coyotes and just kind of grew up doing that. So I was introduced to the outdoors at that age. Got a little bit older and started hearing this thing about, you know, whitetails and this deer hunting thing and seeing all these deer, because, you know, northern Minnesota, it's gun hunting season, you're lucky to see a deer at that time. Mm-hmm. So I'm 57 now, so, you know, that really dates myself. So you go way back in time, the deer herds weren't that strong, and to just see one was kind of a feat in itself. So but then I heard about this archery stuff, so then I'm like, well, I got to get involved because the season's really long and you're seeing more deer. So I started doing that, and I just fell in love with it, and it's just stuck with me ever since. So I've been very lucky to hunt multiple species of animals and get involved in different companies such as Vapor Trail. Knew Jared from the very start back in 93 when he had things going, when he's even working in his garage. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, the whole thing about archery, you're just trying to be a better archer. You're trying to facilitate, you know, a good harvest on that animal, and that's why you do all that practicing, and that's why blended tournament shooting and, you know, 3Ds and paper targets and all that stuff. So yeah, it's been a neat evolution, so I'm looking forward to the future and see what that brings for me too. So
yeah, that's awesome. You got a long ways to go yet, and, you know, welcome back to the scene, you know, and I know you've been out of it just for a minute, and so we're just happy to have you back and happy to have you on our team, and it's just great. We love having you around, and like I said, I mean, when you can come in and work with customers, and then also, you know, be a source of information for Daryl as well, you know, when me and Hollywood are running around like chickens with our heads cut off, you know, it's right. A huge help. So welcome back.
Yeah. I appreciate it. And it's good to be back. So I'm just hoping to do more things. I got more time on my hands these days so I can get involved. So
yeah, it's exciting. So yeah, just a brief overview, you know, we're going to talk about specifically about turkey hunting with a bow and arrow. And, you know, I just thought that I would share some of my own experiences specifically with bow hunting turkeys. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can do it, a lot of different types of heads you can use, a lot of techniques. There's spot and stock, you've got, you know, sitting in a blind, you've got all those kinds of different things. But in the past, I worked really hard at bow hunting turkeys to no avail. Bow hunting turkeys is one of the most challenging things that I've ever done aside from trying to raise a child.
Oh, it can be.
Yeah. And so for the longest time, I struggled and struggled and struggled. And finally I was like, you know what? I've had it. I need to put one on the wall. Got the shotgun out. Finally got one after tag suit for many, many years. And then immediately went right back to the bow reluctantly. I actually had a good buddy giving me a hard time about it. So I went back to the bow. And now I've been successful 2 years in a row, knock on wood. That is a humble brag. There's so much luck involved with that. It's unbelievable, at least for me, because I'm not super experienced. I hunt them every year, but I can't spend a lot of time in the field.
Right.
I get maybe 6 or 7 days total. That's probably like
on the high end.
Well, and that's like the weather's everything, and then also too with archery, it's just there's not a lot of room for error. There just isn't.
Right.
So the kill zone is very small.
Right. Exactly. What about you, Hollywood? What do you got any personal anecdotes you'd like to throw in about your turkey hunting experience with a bow?
I could be extremely sarcastic, but yeah, I've killed two. And I just sent you that meme the other day.
Yeah.
My experience has been, I mean, granted, the first bird I did shoot, I think it was an all right shot. I don't remember where it ended up landing, but I need to finish that one off. But both that I've shot ended up with the blind going up or me through the window running after the thing. And with the one spot, the last one I shot, that thing, I knew it was a stellar shot, but it went into all the tall grass. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm not losing you in there. But thankfully, you like laid all the grass down. So, and I did put one more because why not? I'm always for a follow-up if you can with archery. So.
And that's the hard thing. You know, they don't leave a big blood trail. So
no.
you got to really make sure that you keep a good visual and get a good reference of where you last seen it and do all that. My first bird I took, I got to go on a turkey hunt in New Mexico. So, and it was with shotgun. So that's how I kind of, you know, broke the seal on doing that. And of course I love archery. So then it just segued into that. So over the years I've been pushing 20 birds or so. And luckily, but I mean, I've missed a lot. I've had, you know, some that I'd hit and I wasn't able to recover, which really sucks. That's such a sad thing. You hate to donate to the coyotes and stuff. But again, it's every scenario is a little bit different and you just got to kind of read the room. That's just like whitetail hunting. You know, it's basically a mini elk hunt. So you got to keep on your toes and just kind of, you know, it's a game of chess.
Right.
So, yeah. But that's what's fun about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when it comes to turkeys, right, like typically we're getting into that time of year. You were just talking about how you're going to get some blinds set up. I'm going out tomorrow morning actually to get some blinds set up. And then Damon and I are going to film some content. Hopefully we can get some birds out in the field on the spotting scope and get some good footage of that. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, the scouting side of things. You've got some new ground that you're going to be hunting this year. So what have you been doing as far as, you know, kind of doing some of that scouting remotely and on site?
Well, luckily with the piece of ground that I'm going to be on this year, there's already cell cameras out there. So I sent some photos to you today just to kind of use as reference material. So, you know, cameras, a lot of times too, I kind of like food sources. So if there's some corn that's still up, it's just kind of a natural corridor. Any, you know, bean fields that were picked and haven't been turned over yet, it's good to check the edges. You can start to see, you know, if it's pretty tracked up or not. In the timber, you can get in the timber a bit, but you got to watch because of the roosting. So you don't want to sit right on top of them because you can basically booger them out of there, and you don't want to do that. So I kind of like to go more toward the food sources, let them come off the roost in the morning, and then just kind of make their way through and transition, because basically get up, you know, like we do, we get up, kind of stretch our legs, and then we want to go get our cup of coffee and maybe get a little breakfast. So then they just kind of slowly mosey on through. So just trying to put myself in that best scenario. But with the cell cameras, I've been getting a lot of good photos, so there's definitely three locations that I need to get some ground blinds in. So I'm excited for that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I love that. I wish, I guess I don't so much need we don't need the cameras out in this one spot we go.
No, you don't.
We have multiple people that drive by the spot every day, so they can kind of let us know or keep us posted on what's there and what's...
Talk to the farmers. You know, they're out there every day. They know what's going on. And, you know, if you can, you know, grab a set of binos and stuff too in the mornings and evenings, you can just, you know, admire from afar. And if you see them congregating in certain spots, well, you might want to get set up there, put a blind up, or, you know, walk it, see how you can get in and out and mark the time frames and stuff too, so you're not bumping anything going to and from.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, Charles and I did that last year, the one sit in the morning. It's like just waiting for the daylight to crack, and all of a sudden, boom, first gobble. And I about jumped out of the blind. It was right above us and behind us. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, you know, we both had the thought, like, don't move a muscle. Like, yeah, we've been in that situation. You get too close to the roost in that timber, and it's like, oh, here we go. And he did fly down and went that way, you know, completely opposite way. So it's just like, great. You know, yeah. What are you going to do? Get out and move? Like, you know,
it happens. I've done it too. Hope,
but yeah, it's great. But I guess what would Frank, or what is Frank's bow and arrow setup? What are you looking for turkey hunting?
Well, I've got a prime inline three.
Do show. It is the coolest bad boy inline that's out there.
Yeah. So it's just I still have it set up for whitetail. It's at 65 pounds, which normally I run 60 pounds. I'm shooting a Pierce Tour arrow, gold tip, and then I'm shooting a hypodermic Rage broadhead. And actually, I have my whitetail rig in there right now with the cutting of 1.5, but I'm going to put the 2-inch cuts in there. There's a lot of people that'll back the poundage off. I don't know. I just leave it where it's at. For me, it's just that's where it feels comfortable. So, mm-hmm. And that's the thing too, is make sure from a sitting position, if you're doing ground on the ground or in a blind or sitting in that, you know, practice that type of stuff. So, yeah. And of course I got the, you know, lighted sight, you know, my gold, the black gold sight and that's the whole thing. Play with your settings, throw yourself in a blind, know what you need to click onto to make it comfortable for you, and it's not going to blind you at all. So my inline three, great bow. It really shoots well. I think that was kind of the first transitional year from the multi-track system that Prime had, and then went that direction. And, of course, they're sticking with that, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. So with the 2-inch cut, those hypodermics, that – I'm fairly new, but I've been around enough of you guys now, but sounds like you're probably doing that to keep it in the bird. Big yeah. hole, and hopefully not get full pass through, keep it kind of grounded.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to make sure if you're a little off, you got enough in the cutting range to make up for it. So, mm-hmm. And I like the hypodermics just because it's a one piece ferrule construction. I don't like multiple pieces kind of marrying into each other. So, mm-hmm. And they seem to fly just great and do exceptionally well for damage. So, and again, you know, 2 inches, that can give you a little bit of wiggle room on the bird itself. So
going back to what Hollywood was saying, you know, in regards to preventing a pass through. So for the people who are new to this, right? Like ideally, you know, keeping the arrow in the bird will inhibit its ability to, you know, be mobile, right?
Sure.
So like if it's not a fatal shot, you know, there's that. But is that also the, maybe not philosophy, but the concept of what you were saying behind lowering your poundage as well to help sure. prevent that pass through?
Sure.
Is there any other advantage to that other than the easier to draw and all that?
Easier to draw. Yeah. And you can make sure that you don't have a pass through. Mm-hmm. So, and in certain circumstances, and there's some great, references out there that show you the positioning of the heart and the lungs and stuff on a bird. Everything is, you know, the old saying is if you hit them high, they die, and if you hit them low, they're going to go. So you want to make sure that you know the anatomy of the bird, and there's certain crease lines and things that you can distinctly see, but, you know, they're basically constantly moving. Mm-hmm. So it can be a little bit tricky. I've mm-hmm. found over the years from the beard up, so that's like where your neck meets, you know, your chest. Mm-hmm. So headshots are great, they're really good, but they're normally moving their head a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm aiming at the base of the neck, so that's where the pivoting starts. So this is more stationary than yeah. the neck, so that's where I try to aim there. Mm-hmm. Right. And also too, if you spine, they're dead right there.
Yeah.
And pretty much if it leaves, you didn't kill it. So mm-hmm. there's that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just really educated it.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
feel like a fool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been told like that dead space almost right above the beard and below that, what, the red, whatever part of their
yep.
neck is.
The waddle.
Yep. Waddle. Yeah. Yep. See, yep. still a rookie. So you just shoot right between there and that's pretty much instant for sure.
Yep.
And that's funny. Like I've had a 70 pound bow out there, hunted a couple times, and then both my birds have ended up being an 80 pound bow with a almost 500 grain arrow.
Yeah, sure.
So that arrow, the last one I shot, I might have told you probably, but I sent a picture to Johnny. I'm like, there's my arrow. And it's like way down in the back. It went skipping and flying. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's a little overbowed for a bird, but mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. happens to be the bow in my hands. So, yeah.
Well, if it's comfortable, if you can drop back comfortably and it sits well, aims well for you, why not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That Nexus was a beaut. It is a beaut. Still got it.
Right on. So since we're on the broadhead topic, I just want to talk about a couple different styles, right? So you're using a standard mechanical broadhead, and you know, we're talking about body shots. And so there's another method, like you had mentioned, where you go for head shots. That's using like a decap style broadhead mm-hmm. where you've got, I think Magnus has the bullhead that's three blades. They've got a 2-inch, wait, is it like 4-inch, isn't it?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's yeah. big. It's, you know, it's got, I think, like 3 2.5-inch blades.
Yeah.
Or like is that like the guillotine? I'm drawing like,
yeah, it's the same thing, basically.
Yeah. So it's got three heads. I think Muzzy still has one, too. I've actually got that one, which is kind of cool. I don't know if they're still making it, but it's kind of cool because you can actually flip the blades back in your quiver.
Oh, so
but
you
then when
have
you want to use
huge
it,
thing.
Yeah, you loosen your tip and then flip, you know. What's the word I'm looking for? You just, I don't know.
Set
flail
them,
out or whatever, and then you tighten up the tip, yeah. and then so they're a little bit more mobile. They fit into your quiver, kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it's one of those deals where, and you talked about this, and I figure we'll get into this a little bit later too. But that practice side of things, and part of the struggle that I was having for the longest time is, you know, Charles. He's been on the podcast before too, Charles Dustman, and he's called three birds in for me, and I missed all three of them.
Sure.
And I was going for decap, you know what I mean? Yep. And so again, I was practicing a lot. I was making sure that my point of impact was good with the broadhead. But what I was failing to do is I was in a rushed type of a situation. And so I wasn't, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm experienced enough. I shouldn't have to do this, but I wasn't practicing from a sitting position in a blind the whole 9 yards. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so that threw it all out of whack. It was cold that morning. I had a face mask on, so my, you know what I
Your
mean?
Anchor
my consistency
point
was off. And mm-hmm. and for me to do that three times in a row is just stupid, right? So
and it's humbling, yeah.
And so don't make my mistake, right? Like the practice part of it is really important, but also practice how you're going to be hunting. Put all that equipment on. I mean,
yep.
sometimes it's, you know, people joke about like the elk hunters, you know, getting out early in the morning with all their gear on and their pack and they're running down the street or whatever. And as ridiculous as that may seem, mm-hmm. there's something about it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That is important. And I mean, you don't necessarily have to throw on your camo to get in shape for an elk hunt, but I'm just saying in this particular scenario, you at least want to be wearing the bulk the same, you know, so it just makes sense to wear the same gear that you're going to be hunting in. And then, you know, even go so far as to sit in a blind, you know, to make sure that your broadhead isn't going to hit the blind, because that's happened to me once before too.
Yep.
Because that arrow is lower than your sight. And if you're not paying attention and you're trying to shoot through the crease, you know, I've had an arrow just go sailing off into nowhere because the broadhead hit the little flap.
Yep. And it's just the whole ergonomics of your surroundings, what you're, you know, a blind, you know, and each blind can be a little bit different with the manufacturers too. So it's good to just put your time in there and fling a few, get a little comfortable with it, and it'll just make, it's just a learning curve, right? So you're just trying to eliminate anything that could fail mm-hmm. and become more muscle memory that you're not fumbling around. I didn't put this there or whatever, or my bow, and you want it to just be systematic. You're ready. And that you're going to have the confidence, and then you're going to study yourself, and you're going to make your shot. So,
yeah, I've chose to go with the fumble around method the last couple of years, it's like my superstition that I have with these city hunts. Because in the two city hunts ago, I was known in that group text as the guy that didn't bring his bow up the stand, because I was having, like, I got, you know, last pick, worst spot, like, just terrible location. I'm like, I haven't seen nothing. I'm not even bringing the bow up the stand, so I just leave it at the bottom with the rope tied to it. And then, of course, there did come a time where I was like, oh, my God, there's a doe. So I'm, like, sitting there trying to, you know, grab it. So with turkeys, same thing. It's like every time I've gone out with, like, Sam or Charles or just myself, have everything ready. I'm like, this time, you know, it'll be the time, it'll be ready, whatever.
Right.
And that's when the woods absolutely light up and everything, and then nothing comes. But then if I leave my quiver on the ground and the arrow's completely stuck in there, they come right to the blind. So
yeah, the hunting gods—they got a good sense of humor. So
yeah, exactly. So the last or the only two birds I've gotten is exactly that scenario. I just leave everything, and it drives like the one was with Sam. He's like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "Nah, man, we're not seeing nothing today." And then, sure enough, here it comes. So
yeah.
It's like I have a little superstition there, so I go with the fumble method.
Yeah, that's all good. That's all good.
That's where the phrase. Around and find out. Is key where yeah, it's actually yeah, yeah. works.
Yes, yep. Shines really well.
Done in the last couple of years.
But yeah, so moving on, this is great. Moving on to, you know, hunting techniques and strategies. I know your preferred method of hunting, but mm-hmm. let's talk about stalking turkeys versus mm-hmm. calling them in an ambush style. Which way do you prefer and what methods have you been successful with?
The whole stalking thing, it's tough for me. I mean, it's archery, so there's a lot of movement. You just can't get away, so you need like real estate around you. So if you are going to be slipping around, you got to keep that in mind of, okay, where can I duck behind some trees? Is there a clump of something I can get into? Sometimes they have some like those ghost blind things, you know, they're still kind of big, but if you can, you know, take that with you, slap that up real quick, you know, calling and just, if you can keep a visual on them, great, but that doesn't always happen because they're always moving. So, mm-hmm. Especially when things are hot. So, you know, call, don't overcall, figure out where they're at, try to get ahead of them, duck into a spot and get ready, you know, put your time in, mm-hmm. you know, don't get too antsy.
Yeah.
It's because it's not going to be instantaneous. They're going to come running over there and like, hey, I'm here. So, mm-hmm. so it's going to take a little time. So, I guess from that point of view of the spot and stalk stuff, it's just tougher with a bow. I mean, and I know people that can do it. They've got different, you know, situations where they got those, I think those Montana decoy mm-hmm. that they can mount on their bows, which is great because that's just like a actual, looks like a Tom Turkey on there. Mm-hmm. So you can do that or they, you know, like even for antelope, they had like the cow decoys yep. and stuff yep. too. It's kind of cool. So. Archery, it's a little tougher. So mm-hmm. anybody that can spot and stalk and kill a turkey with a bow, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll sit.
Yeah.
The blind thing works out really well in sports. Well, in my situation now too, it's more, you know, I'm kind of forced into that now, but I always did that before too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pop in a blind, sit there and just ride it out.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Obviously you're stacking the deck in your favor. I feel like in those scenarios, you know, I've one guy in particular, and I know Hollywood's going to know who I'm talking about, but he's pretty fairly new to the turkey hunting thing. And he's must be a glutton for punishment because he's always trying to do it without a blind and with a recurve, no less.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, good for you for taking on the challenge. And I don't, you know, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to like, poop on his, you know, parade.
Sure.
And who knows, maybe he'll have some success. But yeah, I think you know, the ambush style and the blind is the best way to go, wearing all black in there, you know what I mean? And then I'll always mm-hmm. have camo on underneath.
Yep.
So in case I do need to, you know, get out and do a little, you know, be mobile a little bit. Was it last year? I don't know if it was last year or the year before that I made an attempt at that with a Montana decoy.
It was the year before.
You're
super close.
And it wasn't the one that attaches to the bow. I also have that one too.
Yeah.
But this was just a straight up Montana decoy, full strut turkey. And this bird, I could see him. He's like, you know, 150 yards away, just hanging out in this field. And he's just over there and he's gobbling away, you know, yeah. like he was not coming. You know, he was waiting for that hen to come to him. So I'm like, all right, you want to play that game? Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollywood knows about this place. You know, you get in there and it's probably this time of year, you got about 10 to 12 inches of that crabgrass and it's a haven for mosquitoes.
Oh, wonderful.
So as soon as you start trying to move through that stuff, you're kicking them out of there. And
Minnesota State bird, yeah.
Good
it's ugly head.
Lord, I'm trying to belly crawl through that stuff with this decoy, and I'm coming up over this hill, and I'm just, you know, it's got that screen in there, which is really cool. So you can peek through the screen, right, and you can see what's going on. And this bird sees my decoy just starting to come up over the rise, and he perks up, and he's like, oh, hell no. And he starts coming in, and I real quick just stick the stake into the ground, and I grab my bow, and I am behind the decoy, and I draw my bow back. And by the time I stand up, and I kid you not, he had to have been 80 yards away when he first saw me.
Right.
And by the time I was able to do all that and stand up, he was already within 10 feet.
Wow.
And I pulled the trigger, and the arrow went right over his back and shaved all the feathers off his back, and he bolted out of there. It was just crazy. It was like one of the coolest experiences I've had. And the fact that I didn't, you know, I'm just glad that I didn't even wound him. It just shaved off feathers, but
right,
what a cool experience. It wasn't successful, but.
And you bring up a good point, because with archery, it's a little bit different too. So setting up in your scenario, this may have happened. So knowing, you know, your 20-yard pin is going to be good from 20 to about 7 yards. Mm-hmm. So then now you got to shoot your bow 7 and even closer. So now you're going to probably jump to your 30-yard pin. It's all dependent upon where your peep height and stuff is at. So I like to set my decoys up at 20 yards. And I like to have, normally I'll run 2, just depending upon the situation, and I try to keep them a couple yards apart. So when they come in, they're going to, you know, come around and give them some space so that things aren't too crowded. But you need to make sure that you know where your yardages are at. Because, I mean, people throw their decoys, you know, 5 yards, which is fine. You can get them in that close, but then they get the opportunity and they miss the shot. Mm-hmm. And then that, I always bring that up, like, well, did you practice that shot? Because you're probably going to shoot your 30-yard pin or 35 yards. And they're like, no, I never thought of that. And I said, well, go to the range, check it out. You know, and they're just like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Totally, dude.
Yep.
Hits differently and even closer. Yeah. I've had turkeys right outside the blind. I could, you know, dang near reach out and grab them by the neck. Mm-hmm. So you just need to be self-aware. A 1-yard shot, 7-yard shot, 5-yard shot. So if you don't want yourself so in that math mode, stick it at 20. You're going to probably shoot it at, you know, 15 to 20 yards, which is comfortable. Mm-hmm. Gets them a little bit away from the blind and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So give yourself a little bit of room for movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That certainly sets you up for that. And like you said, you know, your arrow is actually below your sight on the bow. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, before it can hit that apex of the flight, mm-hmm. it's below. And I remember when we went to the Western Trail shoot that one year, I mean, they had squirrels, I think, at like 4 yards. And you were using your 40-yard pin, you know.
Yep.
Every bow is a little bit different. I think that's a pretty good guide to go off of, you know, 20 to 7. But every bow is going to be a little bit different. So you definitely want to test your specific rig and angles and all that kind of stuff to make sure.
Because absolutely.
I had traditionally set my decoys up at about, you know, 20 yards or so. Mm-hmm. Then the first time I hunted with ears, he was like at like 6 yards.
Right on.
And so that can be effective as well. Of course, you got to practice that shot.
Sure.
Very important, as you said. The downside with that is that you have to be very careful about your movement. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I've been doing. I usually been setting my decoys up anywhere from 8 to 10 yards.
Yep.
But almost every single time they catch my movement.
Yep.
And I'm trying to get kind of a little bit of a rushed shot in, you
right
know? And so that you have to be really careful. Like I tuck myself back into the corner of the blind as far as I can. Really important to have black face mask, black gloves, or like, I know you like to burn the cork and
Must up the face and all that stuff. And that's, I've even taken, you can get fabric paint from the store at Walmart, and even on the inside of my blinds I've painted them, or get some black curtain netting and hang that so it's really, really dark. You don't want to have a lot of, you don't want to have any light in there. Just from the waist up, you should be hands, face, everything just blacked out as much as possible. You'll get away with a lot more if you do that.
And it's incredible though. I mean, even if you have, you know, your hand, like if you were standing outside the blind at like where your decoys are, and you're looking into the blind, you have somebody else in there and they don't have their hand covered and they raise that bow.
Oh yeah.
That your hand is like a light bulb
in
there. It's so bright. It just stands out so much. So you have to certainly be careful about that. But I think there's some blinds now that aren't all blacked out inside. isn't there?
Yeah, there is a see-through stuff. I have used it. It's actually pretty cool. But I've got, I do have two black walls that I put
up. You have
to. So on the back portion.
Otherwise, you'll silhouette yourself in it, right?
Yeah. So, I was going to say, my Primos that I picked up last year, it's the double bowl, but it's that see-through stuff. And I think now they come with the back wall being black, like blacked out permanently, and then you can buy like add-on walls if you want. But yeah, I don't know. It gets pretty dark in there, but it is pretty fun, and it's nice, like where you can see them coming around. But on those cold mornings, though, that's when you wish you just had the regular ground.
Yeah, because there's more air is ventilating through there.
Yeah,
and that's the thing too, segueing with setting up your blinds in that location, so you don't want the sun directly coming in where you want to shoot out. So, you know, sunrise, sunset, keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And then just, you know, where the travel corridors are, try not to sit right up on them. Mm-hmm. Give yourself some room. Let them have time to come to you. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll hear them on the roost. And it's not, you know, just be patient. I mean, it's exciting. It's fun. Mm-hmm. When they're, especially when they're being interactive and talking back, that's so much fun.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes me think of like a little bit of a misconception that I hear about often too is, you know, a lot of these blinds, they'll have like mesh, camel mesh that you can put over the top, which or over the windows and stuff like that, which is great. I think mostly for deer and things like that, but I've never had like you open that thing wide open. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're blacked out in the back of that blind, it doesn't seem to spook the deer or the turkeys whatsoever. Like they don't, that black void does not spook them.
Yeah. You want to keep the, at least the back half, you know, all the windows shut. I mean, a lot of people have every window open. You're going, oh,
yeah.
And then they're unsuccessful and you're going, well, here's, you know, maybe if we shut these things and you start wearing black and all that stuff. And I've got some spare stuff, throw it on. Let's go out a couple times. And then things kind of turn around and you kind of see the light, but yeah. Cause like, I mean, you want, and that's what's hard about a blind is you can't see. I mean, the new see-through ones, you can see more, but you're still very limited. So if they're, you know, you want to always peek out the window and stuff like that. Well, every time you're doing that, you're letting that in. Now they can see if there was something that you didn't see, could shy off and do that. So you just got to be patient.
Yeah.
Tuck in the cave.
So continuing on with techniques and strategies, we talked about camouflage, positioning, all that kind of stuff. What are your favorite times of day to hunt turkeys?
I'll go out there, you know, before first light. It depends how hot they are. You know, you might get them coming right into the decoys, but if they're starting to get with a hen that's not too receptive and they're just hanging with that hen, but they'll do like a drive-by, like I call it that. So in the morning, you know, they'll come out, or you'll even hear them like 100 yards out and they'll gobble and they'll just go by. So stick around. I mean, I like to stay there till at least 11.
Mm-hmm.
Because what'll happen is that Tom or Toms will just be with that one hen until she, you know, goes to nest or becomes receptive. Because then they'll get either bored with her, or if they go to the nest, while they're on the nest, then now they're going to come back. They've kind of made like a mental note, like, hey, I know there was a hot chick over there. I'm going to go back and check that out. So you'll get that, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock drive by, and a lot of times it's just the birds that went by. They wanted to come over and check it out, but they ain't gonna leave something that they know is a sure thing, basically.
Yeah.
So earlier in the year when they're hot and hammer, it's crazy, you know, roost, boom, come in, you know, and they're right there, yay, that's great. But you get later and it, you know, the hens are getting kind of locked down and stuff, midday they'll start to move around more. They're cruising. It's like a, you know, a buck, you know, he hasn't found one yet, so he's just cruising. So yeah, you could sit all day and have action, actually, just depending on where you're at.
Yeah,
you know, and that's one thing that's nice about trail cameras. You can start to kind of get a history and know where you should be at certain times of the day. So but mornings and evenings, I do like it, but again, especially if I get those drive-by things, I'll stick it out, especially if I hear them off in the distance, like, we're gonna play the weight game. You just got to be patient.
I've ran into them before a couple times, and I've heard of people being successful by waiting for the day walkers, so to speak, the you know, noon bird, you know. And I the only way I've done it is just walking in, or actually scouting new pieces, and then I'm like, there's one running around right now. Like, I've ran into that exact mm-hmm. thing. You know, of course, it's just when I've ran into that one, you know, it's too much brush in there. I had no decoy. I'm just, like, kind of, you know, praying that mm-hmm. he comes to nothing. But, right. yeah, I've heard of a lot of people running, like, the noon bird, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's – and I feel like that would be more later in the year, too, when they're already nesting. And,
yep.
Their hens are already down. So,
yep.
I don't know. I like the mornings. It's just more entertaining to me, just mm-hmm. all the woods light up.
Yeah.
This is so fun.
Yeah, that is true, because you just go from this, you know, very calm, quiet scenario, and then all of a sudden things start to wake up, and especially you get them to gobble off the roost. Just, it's pretty cool here.
Yeah, it is. I love that, getting out there when it's still dark and just sitting there and just breathing in the cold air and just quiet.
Yeah, silent, it's magical.
You know,
that's what the whole thing's about.
Watch the world wake up. It's a beautiful thing for sure.
Later in the year definitely sucks, though. Because the sun gets up earlier. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about it this morning. It's like, yeah, you have to get up at 2:30 in the morning yeah. just to get to the spot.
May
like,
as well yeah. not even go to bed. Just yeah. go out there and read a book.
So
they come
fun.
Out. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like the mornings too. And, you know, I have a friend that he doesn't, 9 o'clock hits and he's wanting to get out.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, you know, even if I haven't seen that drive by, mm-hmm. I still have just such a hard time coming out that early, you yeah. know, like right now, you know, you and I will probably get out a few mornings. Right. And the only thing getting us out of that blind before 10 o'clock is the fact that we got to get in here and go to work.
Right. On. Yeah.
But other than that, like if I had the time, I would easily sit there till 11, especially when you have that drive-by
yep.
deal. And again, like I would rather do that than go out in the morning, sit till 9, and then come back out in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about the afternoons. I just, you know.
Yeah, it's different. I mean, it can be hot, but, you know, again, now they're kind of gravitating more toward going to their roost. So if you know, and they don't just roost in the same spot every single time. So they have different locations. They'll have multiple locations. So if you can kind of get that dialed in, if you're hearing them, you're getting them talk and vocally you can hear them. You can start to pinpoint like, oh, maybe the kind of, then it's a guessing game. Now you're rolling the dice. Like, oh, I think I got to go over this way. Or I got to go that way. And,
mm-hmm.
but again, it's all a big chess game. That's what's fun about it too, is just trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that you said that, because that's one thing, that's another technique that a lot of guys use, and you'll hear the term, you know, putting them to bed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's the one thing that I prefer to do in the evening is just, you know, get out there just before they start to roost and try to get eyes on them and see where they're going to end up.
Yep.
You know, so that gives you a game plan for the following day to find out, okay, which blind do I want to set up in, or do I need to maybe run and gun somewhere else or mm-hmm. something like that. So
yep.
that's a good way to do that.
So what are Frank's turkey calls? Mouth call, box call, slate?
I use them all.
I was going to say, I feel like we all use them
yeah,
all.
Yeah,
there's different times.
I'm weird too. I have like 5 different buck calls too that I bring out. So there's always little tone differentiations, and some I can be louder on, some I have to be quieter on, or they are quieter just when you're getting closer. So you can kind of mix it up a bit. So yeah, I throw a diaphragm call in. I can vocally actually do some calling without anything. But yeah, slate, box call. I'll kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Throw it out there. You know, it just kind of, again, read the room, see what's going on. Cause you could be using one or grab a different slate. Boom. All of a sudden they fire off. It's just the decibel thing that trips them that they want to respond on.
Right. And box calls generally aren't they usually for like just getting it out there? Just, mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, you can crank just, on that.
Yeah.
You can get some distance on that,
yeah.
which is nice.
And then, the slates, I feel like, are like, the way I look at it is like box call is your long distance, slate is your like medium, and then you best be good with a mouth call or something when they're getting close, because you ain't doing none of this with a bow.
Well, and that's the thing too, especially with archery, you know, you're at full draw, you want it to like pause, you know,
yep.
especially when you're going straight for the headshot, that head is always certain. So if you can, you know, purr or just yelp one time and he stops and he pops his head up, mm-hmm. then let him have it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think try everything. And that's the thing too. Our palates are different. So with the diaphragm calls, it can be kind of a struggle. I kind of have a higher palate. But work with someone with that. I mean, you come into the pro shop, there'd be someone there that can walk you through it, because then you can trim it and get it to fit just right. And then once you do that, it comes pretty naturally. You know, you get past that gagging feeling, you know. But yeah, I mean, and that's the thing too, that and you can use the same diaphragm call for calling elk too. You know, do some cow calls and stuff like that. But with turkey calling, yeah, everything. I've even like the old traditional wing bone. I've got one of those. Mm. Friend gave me that. I can actually make it work, but
really?
About pass out, you know, because I used to play trumpet in high school and stuff. Mm. But it's a different, you know, pucker thing that you have to do on it to make it sound just right. So
what the heck is that?
That's
You're not familiar with it?
No, really? Wing bone. Yeah,
yeah.
It's made out of a turkey's wing. Yeah.
And the way you do
it. Cone it out on the deal. I've got one I should have brought it with. Oh, it's all packed away anyway, so I'll do it next time.
Yeah, I'm feeling like because there's some, I really want to go down a major rabbit hole, and I know that we won't have time to do that today, so I want to come back.
Anytime.
There's a bunch of things here on my list that I want to get into, because I'm like, this is all amazing information, and not just for our listeners, but for all of us, for, you know what I mean? Cause we're kind of sharing tactics, and you have probably more experience and more to share than we do, but we can always learn things from each other. Right. So
knowledge is power. I want, you know, everybody to have the opportunity to get out there and be successful.
Yeah.
So
for absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Cause there's some other things here that I want to talk to that I don't think we'll get to today, but we'll try to see if we can meet up another time. We've got discussion about body language and strategies that you can use according to their movement and things like that. Like one thing that comes to mind is the position of their snood and whether that, you know, what that tells you about their behavior and what they, you know, what their next move might be, you know, challenging weather conditions and, you know, also advice on tracking, retrieving turkeys, you know, after a successful shot.
Yeah.
Or maybe not so successful shot.
Yep.
And, you know, so there's a lot of things that I think we can get into. We got safety and ethics, all those kinds of things.
Sure.
So I want to go down that road again. So I think we'll do a part two.
Absolutely. Sounds
good. And hopefully if it works for you, we can get you in here again sometime next week.
Oh, we'll make it work.
And we can talk some more about this stuff. So, but yeah, so just a quick recap on kind of what we talked about, you know, we got into, you know, blind placement, scouting, you know, equipment. That's another rabbit hole that we could really go deep down into.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we'll dive a little bit more into that. You know, we talked a little bit about what else?
Wing bones.
Thank you. Yeah. See, Hollywood learned something new today.
Yeah.
Something exactly. new today. And so, yeah, we certainly, if you've never done it before, we want to encourage you to try to get out there and get at it. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us either on The Range Podcast on Instagram. You can also send me an email, rick@vapatrolarchery.com or hollywoodwood@vapatrolarchery.com.
Right.
If anybody, I know Frank is usually pretty good about asking questions if you want to.
Out on Instagram, it's just Frank Welsh. Instagram or Facebook, yeah, reach out to me, message me. I'm always happy to help.
Yeah,
always.
If anyone reaches out to me, I'll probably give you my best shot and then say, here's about 10 other guys I can probably refer you to.
Yeah.
Because I'm still learning what wing bones are and waddles. So,
with that being said, I want to also invite you to share any tips or tactics that you have when it comes to bow hunting turkeys, anything that we didn't mention, anything we haven't talked about here. We also have a couple of episodes that you could go back to, some experts that we talked to last year. Make sure you head back and check out those episodes. We had one with Charles Dustman. We call him the Turkey Whisperer. And then also Matt Dykes. What was our nickname for him again?
I don't know. Just call him the 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The 100.
Yeah, he, speaking of spot and stock on turkeys, that dude is pretty wild. He gets it done. He gets it done quick. I think he spends probably 10 times more time on the road than he does actually hunting turkeys.
Or in the airport.
Get as many as he does.
Animal. He stopped in last week. I don't know if you saw him or not.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like he flew down to Texas, killed one, and back.
Right on.
Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Like nothing happened.
Get that Rio out of the way. Yeah. Nice.
So again, any tips or experiences that you have, stories, whatever, you can feel free to comment
on our social media channel, The Range Podcast, or send us an email, like I said before. And then, like I said, stay in tune with what we got going on for the next episode. We're going to do part two with Frank. We'll get even deeper into the weeds with turkey hunting for all these nerds that just absolutely love this stuff.
It's all good.
We're all in that boat. So thanks again. You can find the video version of this episode on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. So make sure you head on over there. Give us a like, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. And of course, if you're listening, give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do.
That's right.
Copy.
You gonna pack up your bows or what? I will. Fine.
And
we're
arrows.
Gonna pack up Frank's bow and arrows. I'm gonna go back to the pro shop, sell a prime form and a dialed proof, and then get some more bows out the door.
And I'm gonna go do some bartending.
So. There you go. I'm going to shoot a couple arrows because practice makes perfect.
That's right. Thanks, Frank.
Anytime, anytime. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you. Have a great day, everybody.
Peace.
Vapor Trail is now offering an exclusive discount to the Range Podcast listeners. Enter promo code TRP15, that's TRP15, at checkout for 15% off VTX bowstrings and Vapor Trail and Stokerized branded t-shirts, hats, and other gear.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use, helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.